Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Reff.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Did you ever realize how the stores in your neighborhood influence what you eat? If you're on a tight budget and don't own a car, your food choices are limited to items you can buy within walking distance. Fresh fruits and vegetables aren't usually available at the corner convenience store, and if they are, they're expensive. When the nearest full-service market is miles away, eating healthy is a challenge.
A new study by Johns Hopkins finds that the racial makeup of your neighborhood determines your access to supermarkets and healthy foods. Joining us to discuss the findings is Dr. Kelly Bauer, lead researcher and assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Nursing. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Bauer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't you describe your study? What were the findings?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. The one thing we know is that the U.S. is highly racially residentially segregated. And what I mean by that is that African Americans and other minorities typically live in predominantly African American or minority neighborhoods, while whites typically live in predominantly white neighborhoods. And research has really hypothesized for some time that there may be real differences in the physical and social environments of minority neighborhoods compared to white neighborhoods, and that these differences in environments may, in fact, be the reason that we see so many health disparities in our African-American and minority communities. The trouble is that research hasn't really fully described or characterized these segregated African-American communities to really explain what the physical and social environments look like and how they differ from predominantly white neighborhoods. So we were hoping to try and characterize the availability of food stores in African-American versus white neighborhoods.
And what did you find?
What we found was that, first off, and I think it's probably not a huge surprise, but when we looked at neighborhoods nationwide, we found that the very poorest neighborhoods had the fewest supermarkets when compared to less poor neighborhoods. And again, that's probably not a huge surprise. But what we found that I think is probably more surprising to listeners is that, apart from the level of neighborhood poverty, we saw that urban Black neighborhoods had the very fewest supermarkets. So we were able to compare equally poor urban Black neighborhoods to equally poor urban white neighborhoods. And what we found was that the poor Black neighborhoods had the very fewest supermarkets.
When we say supermarkets, let's define that, because does that include convenience stores, for instance, or the mini marts that are at gas stations? Are you making a distinction between a full service supermarket and those other convenience stores?
Yeah, so this is important. The data that we were able to get is actually nationwide business data. And so businesses register their business using different coding. And so when we talk about supermarkets, we looked actually at supermarkets, grocery stores, and convenience stores in this study. So the difference we made between supermarkets and grocery stores was that they were a food store. A supermarket had more than 50 employees, and a grocery store had fewer than 50 employees. So it simply was a food store that had either a large food store with a lot of employees or a smaller one. Convenience stores are actually categorized differently with this business data. So convenience stores self-identified themselves as convenience stores. Some of them were attached to a gas station and others were not.
Many of us are familiar with the term food desert, and we've heard it used in urban areas. But your study is taking this one step further. It is not purely, as you indicated, poverty that makes these types of stores unavailable in these markets. You're saying that the African-American community, above and beyond poor white neighborhoods, poor Latino neighborhoods, they're the ones who suffer for this lack of grocery stores or supermarkets. Is there any, I know you probably don't know why, but would you have an inkling of why this is so?
Well, you know, I think that that's certainly an important question and one that is sort of fundamental to this conversation. It wasn't what our study was designed to answer. I think what our study really was hoping to do was to look at this issue. You know, as you said, we often get this concept of poverty and race sort of tangled up a little, and we were really hoping to be able to clearly see the individual role of the racial composition of the neighborhood versus the role of the level of poverty in the neighborhood. And so we were able to see that there was sort of this double disadvantage. So a neighborhood that is poor is disadvantaged in its access to supermarkets, but then in addition, a neighborhood that just simply because the neighborhood is predominantly African-American or predominantly Hispanic, they are also at a disadvantage related to their access to supermarkets.
Well, your background is in health and nursing. So what is the correlation between lack of healthy foods, fresh fruits and vegetables, and and disease? Because there are some conditions that the African-American population is at greater risk for. What would those be? And is there a direct correlation between that and what one eats?
Yeah, so our study didn't look at obesity as an outcome, but there is a really strong body of research that has demonstrated that the more supermarkets that are available in a neighborhood, the lower the rate of obesity is in the residents of that neighborhood. So, you know, I think most in our country realize that we're facing a really severe obesity epidemic. And as you mentioned, the rates of obesity are very highest amongst our Black and Hispanic populations. And so, you know, certainly, again, one of our real drivers for conducting the study was to try and really get down to some of the understanding some of the real root causes for these disparities that we see in obesity.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today, Dr. Kelly Bauer, lead researcher and assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Nursing. We're talking about a new study that found the racial makeup of your neighborhood determines your access to supermarkets. So now that the data is in, what do you do with that data? Do you make recommendations? Or do you just collect the data and it kind of confirmed what you thought and were looking for? What's the next step now?
So, I mean, I think that it's sort of twofold. We certainly collected the data and it did confirm our sort of hypotheses, what we thought we would find. But I hope that, you know, through shows like yours and through publishing this data and certainly work that I do as I'm a public health nurse, the work that I do as a public health nurse, I hope that these findings will be listened to by, I think, a variety of audiences. I hope that healthcare providers will think about this and how it, you know, what the implications are for their practice. I hope that public health practitioners will take this into consideration as they think about public health programs. And I certainly also hope that policymakers will be reading this research and taking it into consideration as they think about urban planning and things like that.
Are there incentives for supermarkets to open in these types of neighborhoods?
Or should there be incentives?
Yeah, you know, I think that the location of supermarkets in neighborhoods is complicated, of course. You know, one of the strengths of the study is we were able to look at this phenomenon across the entire country. But we all know that the food environment really varies from city to city, and you can kind of imagine that it looks different, say, in a state where they maybe grow produce locally versus not. But I think that in terms of, you know, incentives, I think that public policymakers certainly need to be thinking about ways to bring business to communities and ways to incentivize that. But I also think that they need to be thinking about these issues of segregation and of especially concentrated poverty and how communities, you know, came to be concentrated with poverty and what are strategies to more evenly distribute that poverty and create communities where there's really quality public infrastructure where businesses would be encouraged or would want to locate. I think that we have to make it sort of a win-win situation for the communities, but also for the businesses. They have to know that there's sort of economic viability to being located in certain neighborhoods.
We only have about a minute left, but is there anything that the residents of these neighborhoods can do for themselves, grassroots efforts? I mean, we hear a lot of talk about community gardens. Some places are starting that. Is that helpful? Will that make a difference?
You know, I think that every little thing makes a difference. I don't think that I think that obesity is a complicated issue. I don't think that simply the availability of food stores is the answer, but I think that we want to create communities where residents really have the option to make healthy choices. And we want to create healthy communities where people can really exercise those options. So I think that as much as residents can become politically active and make that voice heard to their policymakers, I certainly think that urban gardens and things like that are important. I think there are some exciting public health programs happening where they're bringing healthy foods to neighborhoods. I think all of those things together can make a difference with this.
Dr. Kelly Bauer, lead researcher and assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Nursing. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
For more information on the food access study and Dr. Kelly Bauer, visit the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org. On next week's show, your best bet to avoid heart disease, heart attack, and stroke is to reduce your levels of cholesterol. But what exactly is cholesterol? And how does high cholesterol lead to these life-threatening conditions?
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.